So, first of all, I want to thank you so much for having me here. It's always a great honor to come speak to the Chamber. But more importantly, I want to thank you for having your businesses here. It is something we definitely do not take for granted. We feel very privileged to have you in the city of Kirkland, and we want to do everything we can to keep you here and have you thrive and expand. And that's definitely going to be one of the themes that you hear throughout this conversation. So I was asked to talk about the state of the city, and like the very good news is the state of the city is stable with a sunny outlook. Unfortunately, we're not quite back from the edge of the recession, but things have kind of bottomed out and starting to look a little bit better. But one of the things that is a bit of a challenge for the city manager, we have so many things going on, is figuring out how do you actually talk about the state of the city and what encompasses the state of the city. And I think those of you who had a chance to be here last year when I spoke, I talked about the fact that Kirkland really is a quality of life city. And what we discovered is that our economic development strategy really is our quality of life. And we learned this by surveying businesses and saying, why are you here? And why do you stay here? Why do you like Kirkland? And what we found is that 2/3 of the businesses in Kirkland are here because the founder or the owner or the president or some high officer actually lives in the city. And so for us, having great schools, wonderful parks, safe streets, and a community where people want to live, that's really what brings businesses here, because it brings people to live here. So what I decided was really that the whole idea of how livable is Kirkland is really the state of the city, and we're going to talk a lot about that today. And so nicely, we go out and we ask our community every 2 years, how are we doing? Is this a place you still want to live? And in March at the city council retreat, we actually got the results back from that, and we got a pretty nice check-in. 85% of the people who were surveyed this March said that Kirkland is a very good or an excellent place to live. And we're particularly proud of this outcome, since this has happened in the 4 years of the worst recession since the Great Depression, when people are concerned about jobs, when people have lost jobs, when the city's had to cut back on services it has provided. So even with all of that, you know, we're still getting this excellent score. Unfortunately, my son just started middle school this year, and he actually started getting grades, and he said, well, that's great, Dad, but that's just a solid B. And I told him a solid B is not okay with me for his grades, so he told me I got to do better on mine. And I know that this solid B is not okay with the city council either, so we need to figure out, how do we take this thing up to an A? How do we get into that mid-90s? How do we convince those 12% who think we're satisfactory? How do we move them up the chart and get those people off the 4%? And so that's what I'm going to talk about. We're going to do that by focusing on what the citizens also told us in our work program. So what you've got here is this city services quadrant analysis, and that's one of the handouts that's coming around. So if you can't quite see it well on here, you're going to get an actual handout of it. So what we do during this survey is we don't ask just how do you think about the city, but what are the services we provide, how important are they to you, and then how well do you think we're doing at them? And so the vertical axis is from lowest importance to highest importance, and the horizontal axis is how well we're doing in performance. And what I'm very proud of is, if you look over here, the things that are most important to the community, public safety, police, fire, are the things they also give us the highest ratings for. And I think that's been a real reflection of the city council in particular, making sure that we always fund those priorities. So we've funded police and fire, we've funded emergency management, we've funded the courts, to make sure that this is, above all, a safe place to live. Interestingly enough, recycling garbage always comes up as one of the most important things to the residents of Kirkland. Hey! That's all right. And they think we're doing a great job at it. And I think a lot of you know we have the highest recycling rate in Washington, the city of Kirkland does. It's always hovering there around 60 to 70%. So thanks in large part to what you do and your businesses do. But we perform very well there. Unfortunately, making all those priorities continue to happen has come at a bit of a price, and you can see what we call our improvement opportunities. Those are in red. Again, you want to look at your own little chart here, but one of the things that has come up again and again and again in this last couple surveys is maintaining streets. This is something that the public feels very important to them, and they continue to tell us we need to do a better job at it. And then another one that may have moved its way up into the you need to do a better job is attracting and keeping businesses. And so one of the things you're going to hear is that this has been the year the council has designated as kind of the year of economic development, and very consistent with last year's theme of Kirkland being open for business. But what we've done is we've turned this list of improvement opportunities into a work program for 2012. And what I'm going to do for the rest of this conversation is walk you through that work program, which you can actually find on the back sheet of the council goal. There's a sheet here that has council goals on one side and the adopted city work program on the other side. And that's very deliberate because everything that we want to do in 2012, we want to make sure that it actually implements a city council goal. And so while I talk about the work program, I'm also going to tell you the goal that it helps to achieve. You know, there's a saying in performance management that that which gets measured gets done. And if you don't know what it is that you're measuring, you're trying to achieve, how do you know if you've accomplished it? And so the purpose of the work programs that are adopted by the city council is to say, what are we going to hold ourselves accountable to? What are we going to tell the public and the businesses, hey, this is the job you expect us to do and the tasks you expect us to accomplish? And so in 2011, we adopted a relatively audacious set of goals, I think, and we actually have a summary of all of those in a handout that's over at the front desk, so you can actually read our little report card on how we did in 2011. But I wanted to do a couple highlights because one of my personal favorites. We decided whether or not to buy the corridor. And in December of last year, we actually bought the Eastside Rail Corridor, now the Cross Kirkland Corridor. And on April 14th, we had a wonderful celebration as that actually closed and became ours. So we set it as a goal, and we achieved it. One of the other ones, which was relatively new for the city, is we said we're going to engage heavily in the state legislature. And I'm very proud of the city council and mayor. Every single city council member went down and testified in Olympia on something that mattered to the city in the 2011 and 2012 legislative sessions. We were an onslaught down there, and we kept getting people saying, oh no, not Kirkland again. But we really accomplished some remarkable things, and I think the most important was we had the governor proposing to cut the annexation sales tax credit, which would have been a $3.4 million hit to Kirkland's budget. And she was very serious about it. But we rallied, we went down, we worked our connections, we had amazing state legislative help from our delegation, and fortunately we, along with other cities that would have been impacted, were able to turn that around and defeat that, and we retained the annexation sales tax credit. We also had some remarkable individual work from some of our legislators. Representative Larry Springer got us a prime sponsored bill that gave us flexibility for our real estate excise tax that let us last year reopen our parks restrooms, which mattered a lot, as well as put garbage cans back. And then we also, from State Senator Andy Hill, got $2 million at the end of the session to develop the Cross Kirkland Corridor. So making that investment, holding ourselves accountable, is starting to pay off big time. So what I want to focus on now is our 2012 work plan, and I'm going to walk you through it all, and then I'd be happy to answer questions on any of this. So there's a lot to throw at you here, but we're all the lifelong learners, so I know you can handle it. So here we go. These are not in the same order as they are on your sheet, for those of you scoring at home, but one of the things that's going to dominate our conversation is our budget challenges as we go into 2013-2014. What you can see, once again, unfortunately, is we have this gap between our projected revenues, which is the blue line, and our projected expenditures, which is the dotted red line. And that gap turns out to be about another 4-5% reduction that we're going to need to make in the city budget. It's roughly $3-4 million a year, and comes upon three past years of making reductions. So like all cities, we're really getting down to a place where there's really not a lot left to cut that's not going to have some real implications for services we deliver. The very good news is that this gap is based on a lot of conservative assumptions, and we're going to be working with the city council over the next 6 months to start to refine that down and make some changes. Before I go on to the next slide, you know, Ernest Hemingway was once asked, how did you go broke? And he said, I went broke in two ways, gradually and then suddenly. And I want to turn that around and talk about, so how do we end up eliminating this gap? And the way we're going to eliminate this gap is we're going to do it gradually, and then hopefully we're going to do it suddenly. And I'll come to the suddenly parts in a second. But we're starting with ourselves. One of our big focus items is to resolve our collective bargaining agreements. We have our two largest unions, AFSCME and Teamsters, have contracts up this year, as well as one of our more important unions, which is the fire department, the IAFF. And in all of those, we're working with them to try and find ways in which we can slow the growth rate of our salaries and wages and benefits. We've had great partnerships with our unions in the last 2 years. They have not had cost of living increases in 2010 or 2011. Also in 2010, they voluntarily entered into furloughs where they took time off and gave back 3.4% of their salary. So It's been a very nice partnership, but we are getting to a place where we're having some tough discussions about how do we make sure that that continues so that we can have some stability and predictability in our wages and particularly our benefits, which is the next item on our work program. So I think, as you heard from the introduction, I had the great pleasure of working at King County for a long period of time, second best government in the state of Washington after the city of Kirkland. sorry, Lloyd. Anyway, I'm not talking about you, of course. It's those others. But the county executive at the time, Ron Sims, that I had the pleasure of working for, created a health reform initiative that got started while he was there. And under this current King County Council, Jane Haig is a member, had a lot to do with that, as well as this current county executive, Dale Constantino, beginning to continue to invest in that and realize some savings. And about $61 million of savings are coming to King County because of those ongoing efforts at health reform. And we are trying to import some of those models from King County to the city of Kirkland, and hopefully to have similar payoffs. And just one quick example, last year we actually moved the Kirkland Health Plan from the Association of Washington Cities to becoming a self-insured city, which is a big risk, but it's paid off. Our increase was about 6 to 7% in our healthcare costs, and if we had stayed with the Association of Washington Cities, we would have had an 11% wage increase, benefit increase. So we are doing what we can. This is sort of the gradually piece, everything we can do that can be done to gradually chip away at that gap. And now hopefully we get to some of the sublease. This is now really the focus of what we can't control, which is we can do a lot with our own services, our own salaries and wages, our own programs. But what we really need to happen to solve this problem is we need to bring back jobs and economic development to the city. And that has been a huge focus of the city council since I got here 2 years ago. And it always starts with the conversation about Totem Lake. And so last year, Totem Lake revitalization was one of the number one priorities. And once again, Totem Lake revitalization continues to be one of the top priorities. The good news is the city council adopted a Totem Lake action plan, which asked us to look at all of our departments, capital budgets, regular budgets, and what can we do to make Totem Lake pop. And just in the last couple council meetings, the city council adopted a new series of Totem Lake zoning amendments that would make it easier for jobs to locate in Totem Lake. We raised heights, we created flexibility on the ground floor, we had a whole list of things that were brought to us by people who wanted to locate in Totem Lake or expand businesses there, and we brought that to the council as a package and they adopted it. So whatever we can figure out to do, we are doing and will continue to do to make Totem Lake a place to be. Related to that, one of the big challenges in 2010 was we had a lot of flooding going on in Totem Lake. And Totem Lake Boulevard and 124th were shut down a lot. Anytime it rained, it seemed like we had a flood across Totem Lake Boulevard. Last summer, as part of the 11 work program, we did a detailed analysis. We went in, we started to dredge some things. We removed some beaver dams. We made some other investments. And I'm very proud to say that when we had record rainfall this spring and this winter, we didn't have a single closure of Totem Lake Boulevard because of flooding, because of the actions that we took. And we're going to keep doing more. But these are the kinds of things where just gradually, we keep trying to make things a little bit better, so that businesses know the roads are going to be open and that Totem Lake is a place that they can locate and expand and thrive. And then hopefully we get to the suddenlies. So one of the big game changers, which is on our work program, is Park Place redevelopment. And unfortunately, at the moment, the city is kind of in a waiting period here. One of our goals is to try to reach a development agreement and proceed with permits, but we really need to wait for Touchstone to come back to us. So Touchstone is out working hard to land some anchor tenants for that development, and as soon as they do, they're going to come back to the city, and then we are going to do everything in our power to expedite that and get that happening as soon as possible. And that's a real game changer for the city. If that project goes, you know, there will be a huge investment of retail. There'll be some amazing Class A office space. We hope to be able to attract financial institutions, insurance companies, high-tech companies. So it's a real game changer for us. But the city at the moment has done what we can do, and now we just have to wait for the economy and for the private actors to make their decisions. Shifting gears for just a second, when we annexed our new territories, the 31,000 people, one of the two biggest needs that became out of that were fire and police coverage, and also the impact to our court system. And so we've had to make the investment in one of the largest capital projects in the city's history, and that's our public safety building. And so this is a combined, consolidated court, jail, and police headquarters. and it will be coming soon to Totem Lake, right by the Fred Meyer and the old My Home building. And we are completing the design, and we'll be going out to bid with that this year, and then we're going to have construction in 2013 and hopefully open and occupied in the beginning of 2014. But this is another example, I think, of the city's real focus on trying to be fiscally conservative with your taxpayer dollars. You know, two things happened here. One, the AAA credit rating that the city had and that was reaffirmed again this year allowed us to save a whole lot of money in debt service when we went out for the bonds for this. One of the highest rated jurisdictions, not only in the state of Washington, but in the nation. So we got a great deal on our debt. And secondly, buying the My Home building, one of the things that we looked at was whether or not we should build a new building or do something like buying My Home. And even though this is going to cost us $40 million, that's still going to save us $12 to $15 million more than if we had built this building as a brand new building. So every way we can, we're trying to look out for ways to save you money and create efficiencies and provide value to the citizens of Kirkland. Anyone here been stuck in 85th Street besides me? That project started before I got here, so I'm not sure whose idea that was. No, 85th Street is one of our projects from last year and this year. The phase one utility undergrounding is supposed to be completed at the end of this year. And then when that happens, we get to move to the fun part, which is this will eventually be a really amazing boulevard with street trees, with very wide sidewalks, with some consolidated driveways. And what that's going to do is create a really attractive place for the businesses that are there. It'll make it much safer for people to walk or bike. And we hope that's really going to activate one of our important business districts along 85th, as well as be a nice investment in the surrounding community as well. So when this is done, it's going to be, I think, a really magnificent gateway between Kirkland and the city of Redmond. And I think it's something we're going to be very proud of. And it'll be just another thing that makes Kirkland, you know, one of those livable, walkable communities we want to be in. So, and now we get to the not as fun stuff. One of the things that this council has undertaken is we're spending this year looking hard at our regulatory environment and our tax environment. So on the tax and finance side, we're being ably led by the chair of our finance committee, which is Councilmember Amy Wallen, is working with us as we try to figure out things we can do to remove barriers and make things happen. And then on the economic development committee, which is chaired by Councilmember Bob Sternoff, we're taking a look at things in our zoning codes and our regulations that we can change. And one example of that is we discovered that we had some exemptions under the State Environmental Policy Act that we hadn't yet implemented. And we discovered that the fact that we still had those on the books could cost a business as much as $10,000 to $20,000 in 6 weeks in permit processing, and then it didn't add any value whatsoever to the permits. So we brought that to the City Council, to those two committees. They said, go for it. We put that on the agenda, and the council eliminated those barriers and raised the exemption level. So again, I think what you're seeing me say again and again here is that when we can identify something, whether it's big or it's small, we're going to bring it to the City Council, and the City Council is going to act. That was Dave Ramsey calling about the 85th Street joke. He said it was Terry Ellis, right? Is that what? Also, we're going to once again look hard at ourselves. And one of the things that we're going to achieve in this work program is to look at our own development services. And we currently have our group broken up into three different departments. We have something in building and fire, we have planning, and we have development services and public works. And that's worked very well. But one of the things we're going to do is find out, is that still the most appropriate structure? Is there some efficiencies and customer service improvements we can make either with our existing structure or through reorganizing? So that process is already underway. It'll probably go through the end of the first quarter of next year, and then we'll be bringing back specific recommendations to the City Council for ways that we can continue to improve and get better. The Cross Kirkland Corridor Master Plan, one of my favorites. So I could talk for about 20 hours about this, but I'm only, unfortunately, going to talk about 20 seconds. But we bought it, and now what the heck do you guys all want us to do with it? That's really what we're going to be asking the community. And so there are many community processes, and I'm going to talk a lot more about this during the question and answer session. But we are going to be doing a master plan, and we're going to have to ask the question of, should we tear out the tracks and put an interim trail in place? We received this money from the state legislature through Senator Hill. We also received an additional $1 million from the federal government that we got through the Puget Sound Regional Council. So we have the money to potentially start on this track, and we need to ask people if that's something that they want us to do. So that's the process that's going to go on through the end of this year and hopefully begin some sort of construction in this fall or maybe even next summer. And the last item on the work plan, and then it's going to lead into my final set of remarks, is we set out for ourselves to evaluate whether or not we should ask the citizens of Kirkland if they wanted to invest in parks and roads, the two places we've had to cut back the most in order to preserve those public safety commitments. And so we spent a lot of time in the first quarter coming up with programs and checking in with the public on it. And that evaluation resulted in a poll that we did that was presented to the City Council in May. And I don't know, hopefully everyone can see these numbers, but when we asked, polled the actual numbers we were considering proposing to the public, we found remarkable support for both roads and parks. For roads here, it was 68% said they were somewhat likely or strongly likely to support a street improvement measure that included things like filling potholes, arterials, dealing with sidewalks. 71% said they were willing to invest in maintenance and operations of parks and seeing a restoration of the cuts that we made. And even a little bit less, but still very important, we had 66% who said they'd like to see us make some capital investments in our parks. And I think that really goes to that whole quality of life ethic that the city has, which is they want to make sure that they are very proud of their city and the amenities that it provides. So based on these results, the City Council asked us to come forward with ballot measures, which they're going to take up at their next council meeting next Tuesday on July 17th, and I think likely to pass them. And they'll be going to the ballot in November. So what I want to do is just quickly walk you through what's in those ballot measures, just factually, and then I'll be done and I can answer any questions that you guys have. One of the things that people may not know is that Kirkland was the first city to adopt a complete street ordinance in the state of Washington. And a complete street is a street that has sidewalks, bike lanes, and roads, something the city of Seattle is struggling with right now, but it's something that we did a decade ago. And so for us, when we talk about streets, we talk about the whole environment and experience, not just the roads themselves, but also those sidewalks and safe routes to schools. And so we're talking about all of that when we get to the street improvement levy. And I want to spend just a tiny bit of time on this slide because it's going to make the rest of the slides go a lot faster. But what you can see here is up at the top, we have the way you measure the health of a street is something called the Pavement Condition Index. And when you start off with a brand new street, I apologize for these being a little dim, this is your pavement condition index of a brand new street is 100. And unfortunately, it's all downhill after that. So a optimal level for your street is about an 80 to an 85 pavement condition index. That's sort of like you broke in your nice pair of new shoes, they feel good, but they still look good. And they're also really cheap to maintain. So it costs you about $1,600 a city block to maintain a street that's at an 80 PCI level. As that PCI starts to fall, it starts to get more and more expensive to maintain a road. So you can see down here, this is a PCI of around 50, and now costs you $17,000 a city block to invest in and maintain that road. So 10 times as much. And if it falls even further, which happens fairly rapidly after 50, you have to completely replace the road. That's when you're down here in the PCI of 10. And that's $60,000 a city block, about 3.5 times the previous one. And so the challenge with roads and streets is if you don't do it now, you got to do it later, and it's going to cost you a whole lot more money. And that was the conversation that we had with the City Council after we got these results back from our survey. We have a similar gap on the sidewalk side. We have about $120 million worth of identified sidewalks that we don't have the money to build. About 25% of the roads in Kirkland still don't have sidewalks on them. And we have even more places in the new neighborhoods we haven't had a chance to look at yet, so that gap is going to grow. And so we came up with a street improvement and pedestrian safety levy to really address all of these things, to reduce that backlog, to increase our pavement condition index, to go ahead and put back the sidewalks and the crosswalks and safe routes to schools. And so this is what comes out of this levy should it pass. Again, here you can see the red lines are essentially the additions you get if this levy passes. The blue lines are the roads that will be repaired with our existing level of funding. So we'd be able to add about 90 road miles of arterial that we could pave and resurface. And that's out of 150 total. So over half of our major roads and arterials would get resurfaced with this. We'd have 650 lane miles of the city would get some sort of maintenance and operations. We'd basically touch every single street and neighborhood in the city. And most importantly, our arterial, for our PCI arterials, will go from our current 59 which is adequate, and in some cases not adequate, up to a really robust 76. So a dramatic restoration of the health of our streets. In addition to that, we'll be able to fully invest in safe walk routes to schools. We've had a big focus on the elementary schools and a lot of success with putting in sidewalks there. We have not had a chance to do anything about our middle schools or our high schools. So we have a huge active transportation plan that's identified where we want to make all of these things. We have little maps that show us where these things should go. We get tremendous matching money from the state and the federal government. So with this in place, we think we can dramatically increase the number of safe routes to schools. And then finally, neighborhood safety. This is something that we hear again and again and again because we've had to cut it, which is, how do I get a new sidewalk? How do I upgrade my crosswalk? How can I add an ADA ramp? And if this passes, we're going to have up to 50 new crosswalk flashing LED signs throughout the city, and this map shows you where the current locations are. We'd be able to add another 18 to that throughout the city. We'd be able to add 500 new ramps, which work also really well for scooters and bicycles if you haven't done those, but that's something that we really need to make an investment in, and we'd be able to do that really, really well. Restripe 230 crosswalks, and finally be able to address again neighborhood challenges when people want traffic calming or speed bumps, those kinds of things. So that's it on the street side. And the street side really came out of the community surveys, but the parks levy actually came directly from the community itself. And this was in response to a direct ask that came to the city council where they said, hey, we think you need to make some more investments in parks, and we want you to put together a ballot measure. And so the city council responded to that. They ended up, we have some people in the audience today, Sans and Sue, were part of that ask. They put together a Parks Funding Exploratory Committee. And that committee was made up of representatives from all the neighborhoods and organizations in the city. It was about 50 strong. We kept 30 really engaged, and we kept the others informed. And this levy is really their levy. This was created by the community, it was decided by the community, it was presented to the city council, and the city council's putting this on the ballot to see if the community wants to make these investments. And the single biggest portion of it is to restore the cuts we've had to make to park maintenance. So to restore funding to maintain our restrooms, and particularly to put back lifeguards. One of the requests we get all the time is, go back to full-time lifeguards at Houghton and Waverly Beach, and can you please, please, please put lifeguards at Juanita Beach Park? And we've never been able to afford that. So should this levy pass, we'd have the opportunity to actually fully fund the lifeguard program and add them to Houghton, and just add them to Juanita Beach. One of the things that happened when we took over the new neighborhoods was we got Denny Park finally came into the city of Kirkland. And this is a park that's actually owned by the city of Seattle, but it's maintained by an independent taxing district, the Finn Hill Park and Recreation District. And unfortunately, every year the vote to retain this taxing district gets closer and closer, and we all have a concern that if it fails, this jewel of a park, this 46 acres, will be lost to all of us. And so one of the things that we can do in this ballot measure is take over that park and maintain it on behalf of all the citizens of Kirkland. We have one of the most remarkable volunteer efforts that goes on in the state of Washington, and that's the Green Kirkland Program. It's one of the many ways I'm really proud to be a part of Kirkland. Just remarkable work done, tens of thousands of hours to restore our parks and our natural areas. And unfortunately, we, the city, don't even have the money to maintain the staff support to keep those volunteer hours going. And so this bond measure would help stabilize that and make sure we have the funding to not only keep doing what we're doing, but expand that. And then I can tell you, I got a splinter on the 4th of July at the dock. Anyone else? So, as you know, most of our docks need a little bit of work. And so this levy would go through and renovate all of them. We'd evaluate, make decisions, and fix them all up so that they match the magnificent parks that they belong to. And that's something that I think is a real need for the city and something we hear a lot about, again, from our citizens and haven't had a chance to be able to pay for. Almost done here. The last thing we're very proud of in terms of what came from the last levy was this partnership with the city. With the school district, excuse me, where we invest in the playgrounds at the schools, and in return they're made available for Kirkland residents after hours at night, on the weekends, and during the summertime. And we want to do a second round of investments with those. So things like maybe creating synthetic surfaces at some of the elementary schools or the middle schools, and just making all of these facilities much better for everyone. And the schools benefit, and we benefit, and we want to invest in those here. We have two important parks that need a facelift. Waverly Park and Edith Moulton Park. And this would provide us the money to really go in and kind of bring those into the 21st century and make them really nice regional parks for the city, as well as really nice local parks for the folks who live around them. And anyone here been in the bathhouse at Juanita that besides me? So wait, this is probably Jenny can, this is one of our number one complaints since we opened, which is the park looks great, but the bathhouse sucks. And we have the money in this levy to go ahead and replace that and create a really nice concession area and also a rental for boats and canoes and those kinds of things, and really make it the jewel that we want it all to be. And then my personal favorite, there's money in here to develop the corridor, including the possibility to potentially pave this corridor in phases. So if this passes, it creates a pay-as-you-go opportunity, and we could begin to actually pave this thing in segments over time. And more importantly, it provides ongoing maintenance opportunities, because right now we're struggling, as the port did before us, to how do you keep the weeds and the blackberries and everything off of this line now that you have it. But should this measure pass, we would actually have a dedicated funding source to maintain it. And then finally, and I will then open it to questions, there is a land acquisition opportunity fund in there. And the city of Kirkland has an adopted policy that there is a park, a neighborhood, or a regional park within a quarter mile of every resident in the city. And we've come pretty close to achieving that in the former city, but we're not anywhere close to doing that in the new neighborhoods. And so one of the things that this does is provide us money to provide buy open space when it comes available, and also to identify park locations and invest in parks, particularly in the new neighborhoods, to try to meet this goal. So those are the things that the city council's looked at, and I think the major initiatives focus on economic development and then asking the community, would you like to make some investments in the quality of life that we can't at the moment afford? And hopefully, between the combination of the two, our economic development stuff will pay off and the voters will decide they think these are good investments and will continue to be what I think is the most livable city in America. So with that, thank you very much for having me, and I'd be happy to answer questions on this or any other topic.
The dollar price tag on
the dollar price, I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. Worth it, definitely worth it.
Good presentation.
So I should actually mention that. The street improvement levy would be approximately $70 a year on the median average house in the city of Kirkland. It's 20 cents per thousand assessed valuation for that. The park levy, which is both maintenance and capital, is 16 cents. It's about $57 for the median house in Kirkland. So you could probably add those two together if you want, but they'll come as two different ballot measures, and you'll get a chance to decide which one or both that you want to support. So.
I'm having a real problem with bikes and bike riders. They are all over the place. They don't have to follow same rules that we do, and it's like you're scared to death to drive down Market or Lake or Central because you're gonna get one soon.
So the question was about having a problem with bikes or bike riders. You know, unfortunately, they do have to follow the same rules that everybody else does. So if they're not, we can remind our police department that they need to be keeping an eye out for that and maybe put some emphasis patrols on there. But generally, we find most bicyclists are very law-abiding because they always lose when they encounter, you know, the car. But it's good to know that that's a challenge. That's something we can, again, ask the police to maybe put an emphasis on and do some education and outreach. We also have a very good connection with the Cascade Bicycle Club, and we can remind them to, you know, communicate to their members in Kirkland that they need to be abiding by the rules of the road.
They want to get in the left turn lane, and then they run the red light when they get up to the corner. Because
there are a few who definitely do that. So, but a question back here, and then I'll come back to you. No, that's a great memory. We highlighted that as one of our challenges. We thought that the toll line could have a really significant negative impact on the city of Kirkland. And over the first 6 months, that hasn't happened. In fact, what has happened is it's actually made things a lot better going south on Lake Washington Boulevard, because there's not as much queuing up going on 520. The travel times have increased, and the congestion on 520 has dropped off pretty dramatically. We are having some increase in the routes around the top in the north. So we are seeing some increase in traffic on Juanita Drive and I think Maryland, the way Maryland goes home. I keep forgetting. Simon's Row, thank you. Not enough to have created a problem, but definitely a pickup in the numbers. And we are continuing our monitoring program. We do monitor every quarter the traffic counts. So the good news is there has been no significant adverse impact to the city of Kirkland yet. And there's actually even been a little bit of a benefit in the south end. Whether or not that pattern holds is hard to tell. And we certainly don't know what will happen when the I-90 tolling happens. But it appears as if a lot of people are driving onto 405 and just bypassing Kirkland entirely, going down to I-90 and coming across. But as the I-90 starts to clog up and take longer and longer, we're beginning to see people are shifting back to 520 because they'd rather pay the money than spend the time. And so we are seeing those traffic counts begin to creep up again a little bit. But so far, it's been pretty good for us.
Sewer lift station. The sewer lift station.
The sewer lift station.
Be a lifetime project.
The sewer lift station is theoretically supposed to be done by the end of 2013.
Wow, one more year.
So, yes, I know it's been long and involved for all of us, but it's unfortunately not a Kirkland project. It's a King County project. I'll do Val and then Mike.
Kurt, so I'll have to agree with you. I think Kirkland's one of the most beautiful cities in our state, probably on the Pacific Coast as well. But I do have a question about the ballot measures and about the, you know, the levies. When I think of it, for me, it's in a way an enabling measure for any government size, regardless whether it's Kirkland or somebody else. In effect, that you're not able to use current budget to meet the current needs, and therefore we'll let them sink to a point to where we do kind of require a ballot measure or a levy. And I don't have any problem paying $126 a year, whatever that may be. For me, it's more of a factor that continues to encourage the current, you know, government to kind of ignore the things that need to be taken care of as we go along. So for me, it's a question of, okay, we go ahead and solve the issues we have now and bring it back to what you believe is the level it should be at. How are we able to avoid that in the future, regardless of what the economic situation is?
No, that's a great question. And I think that's something that the City Council, you know, was struggling with too as we evaluate all this. I think there's a couple different things I would say with respect to how Kirkland's dealt with this. The first is, we've just flat out lost the money. So this isn't a question of we'd like the, you know, citizens to supplement what we're already doing. And I always give this example that in 2007, our sales tax revenue was almost $16 million a year. And today, it's running around $12 million a year. So in the last 4 years, we've lost $4 million a year off of one of our most important revenue sources. That $4 million a year is essentially what you're seeing in the parks and road ballot measures. I think what's unique to us asking, because Kirkland doesn't ask very often, is really that it has come from the community. It wasn't the council and the staff sitting around saying, you know, here's more stuff we want. It's for in 2010 and 2012, we got told repeatedly in the community survey, you need to do a better job on roads. You guys aren't meeting our expectations. Again, the parks levy is a similar example. We've made the cuts. We've balanced the budget. We've said to the public very transparently, hey, we're making tough choices so that we can stay balanced, so we cannot ask you for revenue. And those tough choices are to prioritize public safety, and these other things are being reduced. And the citizens came to us and said, yeah, we don't like that anymore. We want you to consider restoring that. And so we're going to ask the public, okay, we're going to give you the opportunity to decide if you want to do that or not. So I don't think it's a question of us saying the sky is falling and we couldn't handle it. It's really, I think, our community saying we feel like we're okay and we'd like to make some investments in ourselves. And hopefully that'll bear itself out at the ballot box. You know, if not, we'll continue to do the other things. And that's why you see this big investment in economic development is, you know, what would be ideal is to bring back $4 million of sales tax revenue. And that's why the focus on Totem Lake, that's why the focus on Park Place. I mean, those are our goals, to make those things happen so you don't have to tax yourself. But everything is just taking a long time, and it's not coming back as fast as our citizens are wanting it to. So I think that's why we're asking this time. It's not something that the city of Kirkland does very often, and we don't do it very lately.
So going to that issue of sales tax revenue, what's the city doing to encourage tourists and out-of-towners to come and shop here, especially regarding parking?
Regarding parking?
Yeah, like that's the main reason I come to shop in Kirkland is the parking.
you know, the parking question twist is I don't really know how to answer that. I can tell you that, you know, we have our dedicated tourism program, I think, which some of you are familiar with. It's part of what Ellen Miller Wolf does in economic development. We have some other dedicated folks, and we have the monies that we get from our tourism development committee, as well as monies the city has put in that. So we advertise nationally. We do a lot of work with Seattle and Bellevue to try to get people to come here from there. You know, our efforts are somewhat successful. There are always more that we can do, and so we welcome additional ideas. I've not personally heard that parking is the number one reason that people don't come down, but parking always continues to be a challenge downtown. Some of you heard me tell the story. When I first got the job, I got handed Bob Nair's book, Kirkland Comes of Age, and I read that book, and it was an awesome history of Kirkland. And every other chapter was, and then we had a parking challenge in downtown Kirkland. So in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, there's not a single year or decade where that hasn't been a problem. So I think we're doing what we can. Eventually, we need to have more parking. You know, if Park Place goes and creates 3,500 stalls that can be used on the evenings and weekends, that will be a big part of it. But, you know, we're just never going to solve that problem very easily, unfortunately. So, Patty and then Bonnie. Why don't we build a parking structure? That's the simplest thing and also the most expensive thing. So, it's unfortunately about $10 million to build a parking structure. And that's $10 million we have not yet prioritized as being the top thing that the city needs to do. And again, you're seeing, you know, things like basic maintenance of parks and roads. We can't even quite keep up with that. And so we just haven't had the money to come. You know, it'll probably, the question is, can you charge for it in order to repay it? You know, that's a theory, but there hasn't been any garage that's ever been totally financed just by the charging of the payment of parking in the garage. There's always some level of public subsidy or some other, or private subsidy from a project. So it's something we'll keep hacking away at, but it's just, it's going to take a lot of work, and it's not going to be solved anytime soon.
When I'm looking at the park levy, my question is, why do lifeguards come under park funding instead of public safety?
You know, they could go either way. But they've traditionally been funded in the park department because they guard the parks. But there certainly are, you know, you could make the argument on the public safety side. I would tell you, though, that if we had moved them into the police budget, that probably would have been the cut that the police would have put on the list for their modest reductions that they've had to do over the last couple of years, because it's just not a top priority, and it's really kind of still a use-at-your-own-risk facility.
As you watch the news every night and the number of people drowning around the area, it's probably a matter of time if we have no guards. As the guards in our beaches are making saves every day.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's something we absolutely want to restore. We just haven't been able to, and you know, it's a nice to have, you know, an essential if you're the person who's drowning, but it's not a fundamental obligation to the city, and so that's why we're asking, you know, if the public wants to pay for that. Okay, Kathy, anyone over here? Okay.
I'm wondering if you thought to the idea of the foundation, because as I listen to these things that are needs, if people, rather than just levies and bond issues, if people had the opportunity to actually get to the things that they cared about, maybe that's one way of keeping the things that we do need in our community and keeping them running here.
The question is about the Kirkland, the idea of a Kirkland Foundation. I think that's a phenomenal idea, and that has been discussed a little bit among the individual council members I know. Deputy Mayor Marcioni has been really interested in that. So I would welcome that. That's not something the city staff can really jumpstart, but it is certainly a conversation that we welcome and we think does need to happen. But the chamber would be a great place to start that conversation, and we would support it. So I think I'm out of time here, but thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.